but I am a little early.
So am I. If your intended is not yet there, I should be happy to keep you company while you wait.
You had better not. Henrietta is shockingly vague about time. She's as likely to turn up early as late. He was obliged to acknowledge the truth of her words. When they reached the mews, the girl's sweetheart had still not arrived. She pointed out the White's house, and Jason ordered his coachman to drive a little farther down the mews. He returned to her. In the flickering light of a nearby oil lamp, she looked anxious and a trifle forlorn. But though he was loath to leave her, she insisted.
"Thank you for your help, sir," she said, pushing a stray lock of copper-coloured hair out of the way under her hat. "I wish you very happy with Henrietta."
"And I you with your Angus."
Bowing, he resolved that if she was still waiting when he and Henrietta set out for Gretna Green, he would stop to discover whether there was anything he could do for her. With a word of farewell, he made his way towards the house she had indicated. Penny watched him stride away. What a pity, she thought, that so charming a gentleman should be enamoured of a silly chit like Henrietta White. It had been kind of him to catch her in his remarkably strong arms. She had particularly liked the laugh in his deep voice when he told her that the portmanteau had barely missed him. She had felt an utter widgeon hanging on the end of her rope, as if she didn't have the sense to work out how many sheets she'd need. What she hadn't allowed for was the knots. They took up far more of the length than she had expected. She was lucky not to have sprained an ankle, or worse, dropping from such a height. Lucky, too, not to have brained her rescuer with the dratted bag before he caught her. It had not seemed quite the moment to request an introduction, but she wondered who he was. Henrietta always had half a dozen beaux dangling at her apron strings, though there were few genuine gentlemen among them, as this one's voice had announced him to be. When she started talking about her conquests, Penny generally ceased to listen. Not that she had seen much of her neighbour recently, since she herself had been virtually confined to the house. The August night was mild, and Penny's pelisse was warm, yet she shivered as she glanced back at the house, thanking heaven her uncle was away from home. The servants would have stopped her leaving, but none had the gumption to try to trace her when she was found missing. Where was Angus? Setting down her portmanteau behind a mounting block, she started towards the entrance to the mews. Before she reached it, the clip-clop of hooves and rumble of wheels on cobbles preceded the arrival of a pair of horses, one ridden by a postillion. They were pulling not the yellow-painted post-chaise she expected, but a travelling chariot of antique design. Penny stared in dismay. The cattle were bony nags fit for the knacker, and the postboy had holes in the knees of his breeches. Even the uncertain light of the badly trimmed oil lamp behind her was bright enough to reveal the flaking black paint on the chariot. It creaked alarmingly as it drew up beside her. She cast a longing, envious look back at the stranger's stylish carriage with its mettlesome team of four. The chariot door opened and Dr. Angus Knox descended. Penny hurried up to him.
"Surely I gave you enough money for a better rig than this," she demanded in a low voice. "Why did you not hire a yellow bounder?"
"My dear Penelope, I couldn't countenance spending so much," he said in his reasonable way.
Had the expression on his round, freckled face not warned her that he was annoyed, she would have known anyway, because irritation always made him sound more Scottish.
"We ha' 300 mile and more to gang. At a shilling a mile, 'tis £15, and another 15 to return, with tolls and tips for the postillions beside. This carriage was lent me by a patient, and will ne'er cost us a single